Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Fatal Brushstroke by Sybil Johnson, narrated by Vanessa Daniels. Chapter 1. A fluffy ball of fur named Mitzi was the first to sniff out the intruder, alerting the unsuspecting residents of Seagull Lane to the grim discovery. The frenzied yipping went on for several minutes before the noise dug its way into Rory Anderson's brain. When she realized the barking was coming from her own backyard, she abandoned the computer program she was working on and headed outside to see what the fuss was about. As soon as she stepped out the back door, a white Pomeranian who lived down the street bounded toward her. Rory stooped down to address the dog. "What's wrong, Mitzi? What's got you so excited?" The pint-sized palm raced back and forth between the plot of earth she'd been digging in and the human who'd answered her call. Rory followed Mitzi to the flower bed, but before she had time to examine it, Mrs. Maldonado poked her head around the partially open gate leading to the front yard and the street beyond. After delivering the dog into the arms of her grateful owner, Rory walked across the lawn to see what the furry digger found so interesting. She took one look at the flower bed and knew someone other than Mitzi had been in her backyard. Along with the cigarette butts that littered the churned-up dirt, the wheelbarrow and shovel her gardener left behind had moved. She eyed the colony of weeds near the fence. Strange. There weren't as many of the little green monsters as she remembered. Rory's gaze swept the L-shaped yard from the gate, past the back door of the single-story stucco house, all the way around the corner to the detached garage. Nothing else seemed to have been disturbed. Using azaleas, camellias, and a host of plants Rory couldn't name, her gardener had painted a landscape worthy of a magazine cover. The only eyesore was the flower bed the Pomeranian had been rummaging around in, an area Javier had cleared out right before he was called away on a family emergency. When he left 2 weeks ago, he assured her he'd return to finish the project. Maybe the crisis had finally passed and he'd stopped by as promised. Although she doubted the cigarette butts were his, she couldn't recall ever seeing him smoke. When Rory bent down to inspect the flower bed, she caught sight of something twinkling in the dirt. She knelt down on the grass and plunged her hand into the cool earth, clearing away the soil from around the sparkling object. An involuntary cry of alarm sprang from her lips. Her tennis shoe slid on the damp grass as Rory leapt to her feet and gaped at the finger sticking out of the dirt. She closed her eyes and said to herself over and over again, "It's not real. It's all in your mind." Once she'd convinced herself the finger was a vision caused by too many hours at the computer, she opened her eyes and stared down at the ground again. The finger was still there. Rory shaded her eyes from the spring sun and peered around her backyard, hoping to find a teenage prankster lurking behind a bush. When no one popped out to claim responsibility, she fought back a wave of nausea. The cereal she'd eaten for breakfast rose in her throat. She swallowed hard. Rory stared, mesmerized, at the finger. She dropped to her knees next to the flower bed and mustered the courage to bend down for a closer examination of the misplaced digit. Heart pounding so hard she half expected it to leap out of her chest, Rory removed a chunk of weeds from around the finger, exposing a well-manicured nail. Gingerly, she brushed away the dirt. More of the finger came into view. She avoided touching the skin as she removed more dirt, unearthing a hand, then a jacket-clad forearm. A diamond ring with a stone as large as a Hershey's kiss glittered in the sunlight. Rory sat back on her haunches, pushed her long brown hair behind her ears, and took a deep breath to counteract another wave of nausea. She remained rooted to the spot, her brain frozen, unable to process the situation. Gradually, her mind cleared and the panic subsided. As calmly as she could, she stood up and backed away from the makeshift gravesite, brushed the dirt off her jeans, and reached for the cell phone clipped to her belt. After dialing 911, Rory cleaned her hands at a faucet near the back door and posted herself next to her charge, determined to stand guard until the police arrived. She longed to get as far away from the site as possible, but having found the body, she now felt responsible for it. She avoided looking at the arm as she paced the grass in front of the flower bed, zipping and unzipping the hooded sweatshirt she wore over a short-sleeved t-shirt, periodically glancing at the time on her cell phone. A patrol car should have been here by now. After all, Vista Beach was only a mile wide and 2 miles long where it hugged the coast just south of LAX. They should be able to dash from one end to the other in a matter of minutes. Standing on her toes, Rory peeked over the fence that separated the front yard from the back. Birds twittered in the trees. A gray tabby wandered by. She moved over to the open gate for a better view of Seagull Lane. The only sign of human activity on the narrow street was the drone of a lawnmower down the block. She turned back to the flower bed and resumed her pacing. Burglary, vandalism, identity theft, and the odd home invasion robbery were the extent of the crimes in her quiet town. She doubted the police department had the resources to deal with the problem that now confronted them. Perhaps they were consulting with the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, as neighboring cities had done in similar situations, and that's why no one had arrived yet. Rory stopped mid-zip when another possible reason for the delay popped into her mind. Chief Redmond Marshall wanted to respond to the call personally. She never knew what to say to the man. Guilt swept through her every time she saw the scar on his neck, a daily reminder of the fire that killed the chief's wife and young daughter almost 30 years ago when Rory was barely 2 years old. Rory sensed movement behind her and turned to find a squirrel sitting 5 feet away. They locked eyes for a moment before she motioned with her hands for it to leave. After successfully shooing the inquisitive animal away, her gaze strayed to the flower bed. She moved around its edge, ducking her 6-foot frame under an overhanging branch to examine the area in more detail, putting her hands in the pockets of her hoodie so she wouldn't inadvertently disturb the scene. She leaned down to inspect the jacket sleeve. Even with a button missing and soil embedded in the fabric, she could tell the garment was expensive. Several spots that looked like phthalo blue acrylic paint captured her interest. With her butt in the air and nose to the dirt, Rory studied the hand while she waited for the police to arrive. The dainty fingers and gigantic ring seemed vaguely familiar, but she had no idea where she'd seen them before. Most of the paint spots on the back of the hand were mere specks, except for the splotches on the index and middle fingers that had originally attracted her attention. A thin strip of something black peeked out from under the arm. Rory leaned in for a better view. She felt herself falling forward. Horrified, she groped around for something to stop her descent. With her nose almost touching the partially exposed body, and the scent of damp earth filling her nostrils, her flailing hand found the wood fence to her right. She braced herself against it and breathed a sigh of relief when she recovered her balance.
"Aurora Anderson?"
a deep voice behind her called out. She straightened up and promptly slammed her head into the tree branch that hung over the fence. Rory winced in pain and, careful to avoid another collision with the branch, turned to face the man who had called out her name. From the way his suit fit his frame, Rory pegged him as someone who spent a considerable amount of time at the gym. As she walked the short distance toward him, a look of surprise flitted across the man's face, but by the time she reached him, his features had settled into a polite mask. Rory rubbed her head where a bump was already beginning to form, and stared down into eyes as dark and inscrutable as Chief Marshall's. Although this man was at least 20 years younger and a whole lot thinner and way cuter than Vista Beach's rotund chief of police,
The man straightened his tie and flashed a badge.
Detective Green, you called about a body, ma'am?
Rory felt her face heat up. Good-looking men always made her flustered, and this one was no exception. She moved to the side and pointed to the arm sticking out of the dirt. The detective studied the flower bed, not bothering to glance around the rest of the yard. With a start, Rory realized he'd probably been standing behind her for a while, silently studying the scene before him. Although he hadn't mentioned it, she felt sure he'd witnessed her near dive into the flower bed. She looked down at her tennis shoes to hide her embarrassment. Detective Green turned his attention back to Rory.
Okay, Ms. Anderson, let's talk over here.
As they headed toward the spot he'd indicated near the gate, the detective nodded at the uniformed officer now stationed by the yard's entrance.
Tell me how you found the body.
A Pomeranian named Mitzi led me to it. I was inside the house working, freelance computer programming. I heard her barking, so I came outside to see what was going on. That's when I found the body and called 911 on my cell.
Where's the dog now?
At home with its owner. She paused before giving him the address, a little uneasy about the police wanting to see the animal. The detective seemed to sense her concern.
Don't worry. We won't hurt the dog. It's just routine. We might get evidence off its paws or fur. I promise we'll treat her gently,
he said, after jotting the information down in a flip-top notepad he pulled out of his jacket pocket.
When was the last time anyone was back here?
He looked pointedly at the long grass.
Your gardener been here recently?
Out of the corner of her eye, Rory caught sight of the entrance to the yard where crime scene personnel were signing in with the uniformed officer. Years of watching CSI, Columbo, and all the other crime shows on television hadn't prepared her for the real thing. She kept hoping she'd wake up and discover this was a dream.
Ma'am, your gardener?
Rory tore her thoughts away from the activity at the gate. Sorry, I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around this. You were saying?
Your gardener,
the detective prompted, a patient note in his voice. I haven't seen him since.
Oh.
A vision of a hand demonstrating brushstrokes on poster board popped into Rory's mind. She stole a glance at the flower bed to confirm her suspicions, but a new arrival blocked her view of the body. Still, she didn't really need to see the hand to know she was right. Rory hugged her sweatshirt to her chest, trying to ward off the coldness that was creeping into her bones.
Ma'am, is everything okay? Do you need to sit down?
She pulled herself together and shook her head. I'm fine. It's just... I know who that is. I know who the arm belongs to. Rory had just realized someone she'd seen alive and well not 2 weeks before was buried in her garden.
Chapter 2.
You're telling me you know who that is just from looking at the arm?
Detective Green paused in his note-taking. Rory crossed over to the flower bed, sidestepping the police photographer taking pictures of the partially visible corpse and the team searching the bushes for evidence. She pointed at the arm protruding from the dirt. I've seen that ring before. Plus, see those flecks of blue there? She indicated several spots on the index and middle fingers. I'm almost positive it's acrylic paint. That's Hester Bouquet. Detective Green glanced down at the hand before grabbing Rory's elbow and guiding her back to the spot by the gate.
For now, I'll assume you're right. How do you know this Bouquet woman?
I took a class from her a couple weeks ago.
One class?
Rory nodded. The detective's mouth twitched.
After one class, you can identify her arm?
It was a toll painting class. I spent an entire weekend staring at her hand while she demonstrated painting techniques. Believe me, I'd know it anywhere.
Toll painting? Somehow, I doubt you're talking about the fee I paid to get here this morning. Not T-O-L-L, as in roads and bridges, but T-O-L-E, as in decorative painting. Painting designs on fabric, wood, tin, just about anything, really. I have some examples in the house if you want to see them.
That's not necessary. I get the idea.
Detective Green jotted something down before asking the next question.
When was the last time you heard from her?
I haven't seen her since the seminar the weekend before last. At least that was true, Rory thought. As far as I know, she wasn't planning on stopping by. We weren't buddies or anything.
But you got along.
Rory told herself the phone calls were an aberration. They didn't count. She didn't want the detective wasting time on something she knew had nothing to do with Hester's death, when the real culprit was still out there. She turned her attention to the flower bed, where a woman wearing a jacket with the words "Coroner Investigator" emblazoned on the back oversaw the digging out of the remains. Almost against her will, Rory's gaze fixated on what was left of her toll painting teacher, a domineering woman barely 5 feet tall, whose classes were always full, even though she hadn't published any new designs in years. Known for her realistic florals, but adept at all styles of painting, Hester was a fixture at decorative painting conventions, teaching students from all over the country. Rory had seen her in passing at a handful of conventions, but they'd never met until the recent seminar. Her eyes teared up when she remembered how full of life the woman had been.
She painted beautifully,
Rory said in a soft voice, more to herself than the policeman.
Detective Green cleared his throat. Rory composed herself. She conducted classes at her home in Malibu, in a painting studio separate from the main house. We all arrived Friday evening and left late Sunday afternoon.
How many people are we talking about?
Six? The image of the six of them, all women, practicing brushstrokes in the studio popped into her mind. She'd had high hopes for the class, but halfway through, she'd wished she'd never signed up for it.
Lots of personal attention, then.
A fair amount. That was how she made money, teaching classes and creating pattern packets. When the detective appeared confused, she elaborated. Designs with instructions on how to paint them.
The detective raised his eyebrows. How many of these classes did she teach?
Quite a few. Her family would know the details. Rory's head began to pound. She massaged the bump on her head and averted her eyes so she wouldn't see the progress the diggers were making. Detective Green closed his notebook and said in a somewhat reassuring fashion,
That's all I need for now. Why don't you go back inside? I'll let you know if I have any more questions.
He turned his back on Rory and began a discussion with the woman from the coroner's office. As soon as the detective dismissed her, Rory darted inside and went straight to her work area at the front of the house she'd moved into a little over a year ago. Even though she'd been born in Vista Beach, Rory had spent most of her life in the Inland Empire, with only occasional trips to the city to visit her grandmother. After Nana died, Rory and her parents had moved back to town. Soon after she'd settled into the 1,200-square-foot structure, Rory had partitioned the great room that spanned the entire width of the house into office and living areas. She slathered her hands with several pumps of antibacterial gel, closed the blinds, settled down in her desk chair, and placed the headphones of her MP3 player over her ears. With Handel's Water Music washing over her, the pounding in her head lessened, and for a moment, she forgot about the morning's discovery. But when Rory stared at her computer screen, her mind refused to focus on mundane programming tasks. All she could think about was the scene unfolding in her backyard. In an effort to get her mind off her painting teacher's untimely death, Rory flipped through a technical manual, nibbling on mint chocolate candies she kept in a bowl on her desk while she checked out each entry. After she'd read the same paragraph for the 10th time, She decided she needed a more constructive outlet for her nervous energy. She moved around the house, straightening papers and picking up discarded dishes, until she found herself in the kitchen, the only room in the place with a window overlooking the backyard. While she did more microwaving than actual cooking, Rory still spent a fair amount of time in the kitchen, where she not only ate her meals, but also worked on painting projects. The unfinished project that now covered half the table had been in the same state for a while. Ever since she'd returned from Hester's seminar, she'd been swamped with work, and it didn't look as if her head was going to get above water anytime soon. She hadn't had a chance to paint a single stroke on the project in the last 2 weeks. Rory placed the plates and glasses she picked up during her tour of the house into the dishwasher. After she wiped off the empty side of the table with a damp cloth, she glanced outside. Fewer crime scene personnel had invaded her property than she'd originally thought. One bagged and labeled items, while another took measurements and photographs. Two burly men excavated the body, while the coroner's investigator supervised. Out of the corner of her eye, Rory glimpsed a movement on the balcony next door. Partially hidden by a potted plant, a gray-haired figure stood near the railing, binoculars trained on the spectacle below. Besides family, two things consumed Rory's neighbor's life: her campaign against smoking and her neighborhood watch duties. As the block captain, Mrs. Griswold took crime prevention very seriously. A recent gift from her favorite grandson, the glasses were the woman's latest tool in her daily fight against lawlessness. A chill ran through Rory when she thought about what her elderly neighbor must be viewing through the lenses at that moment. Suddenly, Mrs. Griswold rested her elbows on the railing and leaned forward. Rory studied the mass of activity before her, trying to figure out what had piqued her neighbor's interest. The woman from the coroner's office handed Detective Green a black leather purse, then moved to the side, giving Rory her first view of the exposed body. Clad in a royal blue suit, it lay face down in the dirt. Though the suit was vintage Hester, it wasn't an outfit of her teacher's Rory recognized. As the workers carefully lifted the corpse out of the ground, she noticed an indentation on the back of Hester's head. The spot was caked with a mixture of blood and dirt. Thankful she wasn't looking through her neighbor's binoculars at that moment, Rory turned her attention to Detective Green, who was examining the contents of the purse. She couldn't tell if he'd found anything significant, but something about the way he surveyed the property a minute later made her nervous. When the detective's piercing gaze landed on the house, Rory turned away from the window and started cleaning the nearby granite countertop. As she moved a flour canister to wipe underneath it, her hand inadvertently sideswiped a salt shaker, sending it skittering across the floor, scattering salt along the way. Rory wasn't normally superstitious, but after everything that had happened, she wasn't taking any chances. Since she couldn't remember which shoulder would ward off bad luck, she tossed a pinch of salt over each one, then washed the tile floor, starting with the area where the white grains had spilled. The now dirt-free floor made everything else look dingy, so she moved on to the rest of the room, and before long, she'd cleaned half the kitchen. She was scouring a particularly stubborn stain out of the sink when she heard a knock. At her invitation, Detective Green walked into the room, stopping just inside the back door. "Careful, I just cleaned the floor. It might be a little slippery," Rory said. Detective Green sniffed the air.
"Is that bleach I smell?"
Rory shifted her body so it blocked the detective's view of the bottle of bleach-laden cleanser on the countertop. She dropped the brush she was using in the sink and wiped her wet hands on a flour sack towel embroidered with frolicking kittens. The man looked around the recently remodeled kitchen.
"I've been looking for a place like this. How big is it? 2 bedrooms?
"That's right."
"Must be expensive this close to the beach. You haven't lived here that long. How can you afford it?"
"I inherited it from my grandmother," Rory said. "Did you need something, Detective?"
That class you took. Do you have a list of attendees?
I have a phone list around here somewhere.
Rory rummaged around in a drawer reserved for appliance manuals, receipts, and other paperwork she wanted to keep, but the list wasn't there.
I'm not sure where I put it.
You don't have to give it to me right now. Just email the list to me as soon as you can.
He dug a business card out of his jacket pocket and handed it to her.
Here's my card. You can send it to the address on it.
Do you need anything else?
Your gardener. How do I contact him?
Rory wrote down her gardener's name and phone number on a post-it note.
I don't know how much help he'll be. He hasn't been around in a while.
Detective Green glanced at the piece of paper before putting it in his notebook.
When did you last see Javier?
It was a Friday, maybe 2 weeks ago. He told me he had an emergency and didn't know how long he'd be gone. He said he'd send someone to pick up his tools, but I guess it slipped his mind.
The wheelbarrow and shovel? We'll be taking those with us. You haven't heard from him since?
Rory shook her head. I talked to his wife, but my Spanish is all but non-existent, and her English isn't much better. The conversation was confusing. He's usually very reliable. He's never been gone this long before without calling. I'm a bit worried about him.
Detective Green returned his notebook to his jacket pocket.
We'll check into it. Mind if we look around? Collect a few samples. It's routine in cases like this.
Rory's heart beat faster. She didn't have anything to hide, but the thought of the police pawing through her things unnerved her a little.
Inside the house?
And the garage. Is there a problem?
Do I need a lawyer?
I don't know. Do you?
Rory told herself the search was routine and she had nothing to worry about.
Go ahead. The garage is unlocked.
We'll start there then. I'll let you know if I need anything else.
The detective said right before he headed outside. Not for the first time, Rory wondered if she shouldn't have invested in a padlock for the side door of the detached garage. It was so full of junk that didn't fit in the house, the murderer could easily have planted incriminating evidence inside without her noticing it. Rory sank down onto a chair by the kitchen table and massaged her temples. The jackhammer she thought she'd banished from her head roared back to life. She didn't know which frightened her more. A murderer dumping Hester's body in her garden, or Detective Green searching the house for evidence. So far, he didn't seem inclined to slap the cuffs on her, but after a run-in with the Vista Beach Police Department not long after she moved to town, she'd become leery of its members. Chief Marshall had arrested Rory when a suspicious fire erupted in downtown Vista Beach, convinced she was responsible for setting it. Even after the real culprit had been found and her name cleared, months had passed before Rory no longer felt inquisitive eyes staring at her when she walked down the street. This time she was determined not to be blindsided by another false accusation. Looking for a sympathetic ear, Rory dialed a familiar number and almost immediately heard the click of a receiver.
Vista Beach Realty, Elizabeth Dexter speaking. How may I be of service?
It's me. Do you have a minute?
Rory stopped, unsure what to say next.
What's going on?
Liz said, a note of concern in her voice. Rory took a deep breath and plunged in.
I found a body in my garden. Hester Bouquet's body.
Rory held the phone away from her ear, bracing herself for a cry of alarm. But instead of a loud noise, all she heard was a strangled gasp. Chapter 3.
I can't believe you found Hottie Hester's body in your garden.
The breeze blew in over the plexiglass walls surrounding the patio of the beachside restaurant where Rory and Liz sat eating lunch. Rory hunched over her food and picked at her mixed green salad, her long hair brushing the tabletop. She barely heard Liz's comment above the whirs and squeaks coming from the nearby walkway,
where joggers, walkers, bikers, and skaters crossed paths in an
sample complete. Ready to continue?